FreedomSlips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, by all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Right. You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to Free Association. A hastily constructed show today, but we'll see how it goes. It looks like it might work, and that's good enough for me. I've been busy this week, though, so I've had other things to think about. So I gave it today as a place to... Normally, I construct the show sometime Thursday, Friday, and then I do a kind of rehearsal, a technical rehearsal or whatever, on a Saturday morning for me, just to make sure I've got everything in order. But I haven't really done that with this particular material, so... We'll just see how it goes anyway. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon where I am, which means it's 11 a.m. on the East Coast in the States. Free Association's here every Saturday morning. And we're running a theme at the moment. I've got a eugenics theme running for the last 3 weeks. Started with Joni Mitchell and then went through Genesis of the Daleks last Saturday, which seems like a lifetime ago to me. And today I've got a show lined up mostly about the Wellcome Trust, various different aspects of the Wellcome Trust. A thing called Wellcome Leap, which is an investment fund that's what it looks like to me anyway, a research and development investment fund to bring technology, to bring health technology to market, is what it looks like. There's been some stories floating around in the alternative media about Wellcome Leap, and associating it with eugenics and transhumanism. And I think, yeah, probably it could be, it can legitimately be associated with transhumanism, because if you're adding some kind of medical device to a person, that's a version of transhumanism. But people have had prosthetic arms and legs for years. Is that, does that count as transhumanism? If a medical device is a medical device. I thought transhumanism was more to do with uploading consciousness into the cloud or whatever. But the association is definitely there. The eugenics association comes from the history of the eugenics society, which is now part of the, I think, part of the Wellcome Trust. At least they've got the archives. So I'm going to read through a little bit of what's in the archive. I'm interested in this partly because I used to walk past the Wellcome Trust almost every day when I lived in London 20 years ago. It's on the corner of Euston Road and Gower Street, I think, by Euston Square Underground Station. So it's a big building with an open front and an atrium and an art gallery. And obviously they've got offices upstairs and they've got archives presumably at the back and in the basement. That's usually where the archives for everything go. But I've never been in to that particular building, despite the fact I've walked past it 100,000 times. So I might put it on my list. If I ever do go back to London on a visit or whatever, I'll put it on my list of places to go. I'd quite like to rummage around in the Eugenics Society archive if I get the opportunity. But so that leads me nicely into what's actually in the Eugenics Society archive, which I've got here somewhere. Here we go. So let me get to the beginning. So I'll just read what it says, because this is on wellcomecollection.org. And it's where the Eugenics Society archives have ended up being stored. So if anybody wants to do research, none of this stuff seems to be hidden. It's all, if you had a legitimate research reason for being there, they would let you go in and have a look by appointment, I would assume. So I'll just read what this says. Since the initial deposit, sections A to K, it's very dry, this stuff, but consists mainly of correspondence and associated papers, leaflets, memoranda, extracts from minutes, etc. There are two main series of correspondence, people and general, and some other distinct smaller series such as branches and other societies. The internal arrangement of these files is normally chronological, with a few exceptions. There are also lecturers' report sheets, publications, slides, posters, charts, and photographs. Mainly, but not exclusively, in Section G, which is propaganda and publicity. It's a set of annual reports and related material from 1908 up to 1979. So that's probably the main interesting stuff, is the annual reports for, what's that, about 70 years, just over 70 years? It says, in 1988, minute books and the Society's extensive collection of press cuttings, plus some financial records, were added as sections L to N. Further annual reports, minutes and other meeting papers have been received subsequently, and additional files on former members and various administrative matters were received in 2008. And there's some minutes and bequests on the Mary Stopes Research Fund in there as well. So there's a long list of things, of sections in. So annual reports is Section A. Section B is early files, 1908 to 1919. Section C is people, 1919 to 2006. Section D is general, 1919 to 2004. And then there's some sections on society, associated societies, family histories, propaganda and publicity, bequests, Sir Bernard Mallet papers. I don't know who Sir Bernard Mallet is, but I'll find out at some point. Some miscellaneous stuff. Minutes of bodies associated with the Eugenics Society. Sections L62 to 67. Financial reports, press cuttings, portraits and photographs. Papers of Dr. G.C. Bertram, 1945 to 1991. I don't know who Dr. G.C. Bertram is either, but his papers are in there. The Galton Institute newsletter and other publications in Section Q. So the bulk of these papers were collected from the British Museum, British Library, where they had been initially deposited in February 1980. A few miscellaneous items, slides, charts, photographs, were collected from the Society's offices in March 1980, consisting of additional boxes, a paper and a set of annual reports and related items. Collected from Eccleston Square. I don't need to really read all of this stuff. The biographical stuff at the bottom here. The Eugenics Society was founded under the name Eugenics Education Society in 1907 to promote public awareness of eugenics problems, i.e. existence of hereditary qualities, both positive and negative, and the need to encourage social responsibility with respect to these qualities. Unlike the Galton Laboratory, which was also inspired by the teachings of Sir Francis Galton and founded in 1904, the Eugenics Society was a popular rather than scientific institution, although its aims and objects varied during the years, and in 1963, it abandoned propaganda on being granted charitable status. So 1963 is the year where it stopped being a promotions arm of something. And beside its involvement in theoretical aspects of eugenics, the society was also interested in the practical means by which eugenics ideals could be attained. So these records contain a good deal of material on subjects such as treatments of the mentally and physically defective, the development of birth control methods, legislation of sterilization, the use of artificial insemination, etc. A large number of people in all stations of life, some of them very distinguished, were involved with the society. And Section C, People, has all the details of those people. Society changed its name to the Galton Institute in 1989. And it says, for a fuller treatment of the history of the Eugenics Society, see Faith Schenck and A.S. Parks, The Activities of the Eugenics Society, in the Eugenics Review, number 60, published in 1968, pages 142 to 161. For the early years of the Society, see L.A. Farrell, The Origins and Growth of English Eugenics Movement, 1863 to 1925, which is an unpublished PhD thesis from Indiana University in 1970. And there's a file called Notes on the Early Days of the Eugenics Education Society by Lady Chalmers. Okay, so that's the relevant material, lots of stuff on microfiche and a lot of boxes. So that's really what the archive consists of at the Wellcome Trust. And moving on from that, I've got Wellcome Leap, which has been around in the alternative media for a little while. I've got a piece from the Corbett Report in July of this year, 2021. Which I've got set up, which is the Wellcome Leap into Transhumanism. So I'm now going to play that for about half an hour, probably maybe 25 minutes, half an hour. It's got Whitney Webb describing all of the people that are involved in Wellcome Leap, who've got a colourful history.
this article that we're going to be talking about today touches on this whole other.
Okay, let's try again. I think I got bumped off. So I'm going to start my recording again. Right, this shouldn't really affect the show too much. I'll just screen share and go straight into the video again. Oh, stuck. Let's see what's going on. I think I've frozen up. Let's try again. Right, we're nearly there. I'll screen share it yet again, and then off we go.
But the fact that they are targeting children specifically and plan to target them in a massive way within 10 years is just stunning. And I think shows that these people really think they cannot be stopped. And it's really, you know, I would argue up to concerned parents and concerned citizens to protect the most vulnerable from this type of invasive technology.
You're listening to the Corbett Report.
Welcome back, friends. James Corbett here, CorbettReport.com, in a conversation that's being recorded on the 6th of July, 2021. And I'd like to think that Corbett Report listeners are particularly well situated to understand the otherwise seemingly bizarre left turn that the generated COVID crisis has taken in recent months with this bio-digital convergence and transhumanism talk and all of these crazy ideas that are coming about as a result of this. As I say, I'd like to think that if you've been listening to my report for years or a decade and a half, you will have seen this coming because, of course, biodigital convergence is just the old wine of transhumanism in a new bottle, and transhumanism was just the old wine of eugenics in a new bottle, coined, of course, by the brother of Brave New World author Aldous Huxley, a.k.a. Julian Huxley, who, in addition to being a card-carrying eugenicist, was also the founder of UNESCO, talking about how we need to make eugenics a politically acceptable idea again. As I say, you will know all of that history if you have gone into my reports on this in the past. But even so, even if you were on some level prepared for this left turn, it is getting extremely crazy extremely quickly, perhaps more so than people can even keep a handle on. And mea culpa, me too. I have to say, this article that we're going to be talking about today touches on this whole other institution/set of programs that I didn't even have on my radar until I read this article. So I think this it serves your interest to read it. Today we're going to be talking about the latest article from Whitney Webb at unlimitedhangout.com, which I hope you are checking on a regular basis. If not, you will want to read this article in particular. It's called A Leap Toward Humanity's Destruction. And Whitney, your articles are known for being voluminous and detailed, and boy, this article does not disappoint on that front. So thank you for writing this, and thank you for introducing us to Welcome Leap. Now, as I say, this is such a big article. There's so much data in here that we should and could dig our teeth into. But so I think there are three different ways that we can start to approach this topic. We could start with the cast of characters and outline who these people are and their shady backgrounds and where they're coming from. We can talk about the Welcome Leap itself and what it is and its relation to the Welcome Trust, which we were talking a little bit about in our previous conversation about AstraZeneca. Or we could talk about the programs that are being forwarded under Welcome Leap. And I think either any one of those would serve as an entree into this conversation. What would you like to start with?
Well, what I started with in the article was the cast of characters, because I think it shows when you look into their background specifically, that their professed desire through Welcome Leap, this new organization they've made to improve global public health and all of these things, are not exactly what they claim to be. But we can definitely talk about the first two of those together in sort of a reduced way, because as you did point out, this article is quite long, but it is that way because I was hoping to extensively document it, that other people can make summaries and whatnot, just to have as much, you know, detail and documentation there for people that want that. Of course, it's not for everyone. But essentially, for people that don't know the Wellcome Trust, it's the world's wealthiest private medical research charity that was created through the will of Henry Wellcome, who was a pharmaceutical magnate whose company Burroughs Wellcome eventually went through several mergers to now become what is now GlaxoSmithKline. So GlaxoSmithKline, more often than not, will have ties to the Wellcome Trust and in terms of research and other initiatives, and you can see some of those connections in this article. But the Wellcome Trust has had, even going back to the 1990s, there was a Sunday Times investigation into the Wellcome Trust, just about the extreme power and influence this had, particularly in the fields of genetics and bioengineering, with the Sunday Times saying back then that the decisions the Wellcome Trust make will shape the future of the human race for years and decades to come. And that was back in 1994. And of course, this institution has been around since Henry Wellcome died in 1936. And as we talked about last time, yes, they did have some connections, several connections to the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, but also the organization known today as the Galton Institute, which was previously the Eugenics Society and maintained that name until 1989, when it changed to the Galton Institute, claiming that it no longer favored eugenics, but oddly renamed themselves after the founder of eugenics, Francis Galton, who instead of labeling a racist eugenicist, they describe as a brilliant 19th century polymath. So that can sort of tell you about their opinions of that particular field. But basically, what Wellcome Leap is a team up of the Wellcome Trust with two individuals that used to run DARPA under the Obama administration, and both of whom later went on to create DARPA equivalents for Silicon Valley at Google and Facebook, basically creating privatized DARPA for Silicon Valley, specifically Silicon Valley companies whose early origins have ties to the U.S. national security state, Google having received considerable funding and input from the CIA in its founding, and Facebook having considerable ties to DARPA itself, among other things, which I've detailed in a previous article. So those ties are quite concerning. And then, of course, the Wellcome Trust, in addition to its dominance, really, of medical research globally, also works very closely with the World Economic Forum and was actually the mastermind behind the Wellcome Trust and World Economic Forum's team up with the Nuclear Threat Initiative, which, if you're not familiar with that, it was co-created by Ted Turner, another depopulation promoting billionaire who owns CNN. And the the other founder is former Senator Sam Nunn, who, if you are familiar with the Dark Winter exercise from June 2001 that eerily predicted the 2001 anthrax attacks, you will know that Sam Nunn basically led that exercise, pretending, you know, playing the role of president in that simulation. And of course, NTI's role in this partnership with WEF and the Wellcome Trust is actually funded by a former Facebook executive, one of the co-founders of Facebook, Dustin Muscovitz. So it's quite interesting to see these players come up more often than not in what Wellcome Leap is and does. And so Wellcome Leap officially defines themselves as a global health DARPA, a DARPA for health. It's no coincidence that this launched around the same time that the Biden administration, or that this came, has become more prominent, has been launching more programs. It was created last year. But the Biden administration in the past couple months has promoted the creation of a health DARPA for the US, specifically HARPA, which is actually an agenda that goes back to the Trump administration and was being designed and created by a former DARPA, the former head of DARPA's Biological Technologies Office. So Welcome Leap is basically a global research agency focusing on bioengineering and transhumanist tech that is also being modeled by national governments. So this isn't necessarily exclusive in that sense, but it's definitely something to look at. And as we can get into in a moment, their projects are really astounding in what they claim to achieve within a 5 to 10 year period, which is quite small, but with the influence and the funding of the Wellcome Trust and of course the US military and Silicon Valley connections here definitely make this a formidable force. But of course it's only really been set up and is just beginning, and their agenda can be stopped if we make it so.
Excellent. Well, that's a very good summary of a lot of information. So again, I hope people will go to the article itself for all of the links and all of the information there, but let's not gloss over the couple of characters that you mentioned there who, as you say, were DARPA officials under Obama who went to Google, went to Facebook. Specifically, we're talking about Regina Dugan and the Gabriel, I forget his name.
Ken Gabriel.
Ken Gabriel, mm-hmm. That's right. So let's talk a little bit about them and their background.
Sure. So Regina Dugan started her career at DARPA, I believe, in 1996. She leaves in 2001 to become one of the top advisors to the U.S. Army Chief of Staff. From 2001 to 2003, which of course most people are aware coincides with the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan, she was advising on counterterrorism issues in that scenario. A few years later, she creates a defense contracting firm called Red X Defense that gets her into a lot of trouble when she is named director of DARPA under the Obama administration in 2009, because she starts basically giving numerous lucrative contracts to her company when they didn't necessarily deserve them, and then is found later violating government ethics stipulations. Of course, nothing is done, as is often the case. But her company, Red X Defense, for example, focused on IED detection technology, roadside bombs for use in Iraq and Afghanistan. And it was found that their technology was just as useful as flipping a coin, basically meaning it didn't work. So this is the type of woman she is in these types of institutions. Her time at DARPA is pretty significant because she founded a couple key offices that sort of set what would define her career in subsequent years, such as creating the Transformational Convergence Technology Office. Of course, as you mentioned, this bio-digital convergence, transformational convergence is quite similar in as far as buzzwords go. And this was about this particular office was about combining synthetic biology, machine learning, and social networks specifically. And some of that has since been folded into what is now the Biological Technologies Office, or BTO of DARPA, that focuses on a lot of biotech and transhumanist tech and neurotechnology that is health focused, they say, more often than not. But I would argue, at least in the context of today's events, Dugan's most important contribution at DARPA was her decision to greenlight DARPA's investments in the mRNA vaccine production platforms of both Pfizer and Moderna, which ended up taking place in 2013. She left in 2012, but had greenlighted those investments before they were made. And the program manager at DARPA that worked with Dugan on this, Dan Wattendorf, now is, I think, head for Innovation of Special Solutions or something like that at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So again, just amazing how cohesive the players
are. Small world, huh?
yeah, for sure. So she's basically headhunted from DARPA in 2012 by Google and ends up heading Google's Advanced Technology Products Group, abbreviated as ATAP or ATAP, which was basically Google acquired Motorola Mobility from Motorola and wanted to basically use that company's assets to create their own DARPA, essentially. And that's what ATAP, Google's ATAP, is. And Dugin was put in charge. But it was actually Dugin's deputy, Ken Gabriel, who is now chief operating officer of Wellcome Leap, that created that group for Google. And then Dugin was put in charge, which is quite interesting because, especially now with Wellcome Leap, you can see that Dugin and Gabriel's careers tend to intersect at various times throughout history. So why she's at Google, Dugin is involved in developing a lot of controversial things, including a digital pill that when you swallow it, turns your whole body into an authentication token. And some media reports said it turns you into a cyborg, sort of, and all of this stuff, while also fawning over Dugin. But basically, you know, she also was responsible for developing a digital tattoo used to unlock smartphones. Not unlike, of course, some people, of course, are probably familiar with the Bob Langer developed, or maybe it was MIT developed, but not Bob Langer. But the digital tattoo for vaccine records and stuff like that that was promoted last year. So, you know, this whole thing, of course, of vaccine passports and vaccine records being tied to digital biometric IDs and all of that is an agenda that's come to the forefront in recent months. So it's interesting to see Dugin's role in that. And then she also created the basis for what is now Google's augmented reality or AR business and smart clothing called Project Jacquard. Which is basically weaving multi-touch sensors and conductive wiring into textiles. They have partnered with Levi Jeans. So that's fun. And she basically describes her work at Google as solving what she describes as the mechanical mismatch between humans and machines. It really doesn't get more transhumanist than that. And while she's serving in this capacity at Google, she is leading panels at the Clinton Global Initiative and attending Bilderberg meetings with Eric Schmidt, who was her boss then and has been a major player in determining U.S. national artificial intelligence policy for both the military and the intelligence community, oddly enough. So Dugin eventually gets headhunted again from Google, goes to work for Facebook, where she basically leads and helps build Facebook's own DARPA equivalent, then called Building 8. They have since renamed it something else. The project she started there was the creation of a what they describe as a neural wearable, essentially a wristband that from your wrist can read your brain signals, know what you're going to type before you even move your fingers, among other things. And actually, Facebook has showcased prototypes of this, two different prototypes a few months ago, and claim that they will have it available in a couple years. They claim that it won't be able to read your brain, even though they basically say that what it does is read your brain signals, just only some of them. Trust Facebook as much as you want with that type of access to your body. I know I certainly won't be. But anyway, Dugin eventually leaves Facebook mysteriously just 18 months after joining and building Building 8 to focus on building and leading a new endeavor, which we later find out is actually Wellcome Leap. And so that's essentially what Dugin's been up to in a nutshell since becoming the chief executive officer of Wellcome Leap. She has also joined the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force on U.S. technology and innovation policy alongside Eric Schmidt, LinkedIn's Reid Hoffman, and some other prominent individuals, including Biden's top science advisor, head of the Broad Institute, Eric Lander, who, of course, was funded by Jeffrey Epstein, among other unsettling connections there.
Whew, that was quite a whirlwind tour. And again,
yeah, sorry.
Well, it's all there, and there's links to back up each and every part of this. And I have actually had Regina Dugin on my radar for several years now because of that DARPA, Facebook, and we're going to read your mind and all of this. I mean, it's just a crazy story. I didn't know all of the details of that, though, and it's just, it gets crazier the more you know. And here she ends up at Wellcome Leap, developing. Again, it's almost as if, you know, the World Economic Forum stakeholder capitalism, public-private partnership ideal is at play here. We have the best of all worlds, philanthropic world, the corporate for-profit world, and the public world is nexusing in here with these. What is someone like a Dugan or a Gabriel? They are government employees. They are for profit. They're at these philanthropic institutions. They're interfacing with all these other people at Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and everywhere else. It is just a group of people who are in public or private business as the need arises for their cover for the next stage of an agenda that is clearly unfolding here. What's your take on what Welcome Leap represents in terms of that nexus of philanthropic / profit / public enterprises?
I think what Welcome Leap is a way to supercharge and rapidly advance this type of technology that the ruling class that is behind this agenda feels like it needs to develop sooner rather than later in order to succeed in accomplishing what they want to accomplish before 2030, which is a year that comes up again and again, including in Welcome Leap, but also in various other related agendas and policy documents focusing on that year specifically. And of course, Welcome Leap, created in 2012, aims to complete all of its projects by 2030. They make that quite explicit. So I think by having it led by someone like Regina Dugan and Ken Gabriel, who really more than anyone else embody the revolving door between the military industrial complex and Silicon Valley, which has become much more overt over time. You have those connections. You have the Wellcome Trust and someone specifically Jeremy Farrar at the Wellcome Trust, who has been intimately involved with a lot of the crafting of the narrative for COVID-19, particularly the zoonotic origin narrative with people like Peter Daszak and Anthony Fauci actually appearing as one of the most heavily redacted individuals in the recently released Fauci emails, ostensibly the head of this charitable trust, being intimately involved in that is quite significant. And then also there is another individual that is quite important to point out, who is Jay Flatley, the longtime head of Illumina, whose company that he still has a lot of influence over as their the chairman of the board of directors, completely dominates genetic testing and genome sequencing. Most companies that you may have heard of that offer genetic sequencing, like 23andMe or the recently acquired by Blackstone Capital, Ancestry.com, rely on machines produced by Illumina, as do, you know, pretty much all of these medical research things or institutions that are sequencing the new COVID variants and doing all of this genomic study on people from their COVID-19 test results, among other things. This is all being done by Illumina, which oddly enough, this year represents the conclusion of their aggressive 5-year plan launched in 2016 to make gene testing the new norm in medicine, with the ultimate goal of having all individuals genetically tested from birth to grave, not just for health purposes, but also useful commercial purposes, whatever that may be. You know, these are some very powerful individuals. To me, it really looks like these individuals have come together because they know that time is of the essence in advancing this agenda. If they wait too long, people will wake up to the agenda. They can only use, you know, pandemics and lockdowns and all of these strategies we've seen implemented in the past year for so long before people are like, well, how does that relate to all this transhumanist tech? And why do you want me to wear this? And you know, all of those things. The longer that takes to implement, the riskier it is for them, I would argue. So I think Welcome Leap is a way to supercharge this by combining some of the most powerful people in various industries and in various worlds, whether it's, you know, Silicon Valley, DARPA neurotech research, and the Wellcome Trust dominance of medical research. You know, it's a pretty significant organization that deserves considerable attention, I would argue.
Yeah, demonstrably so. And you're very right to point out the timeline of this, because there are so many different threads of this agenda that all have lined up around this period in particular, things that started ostensibly long before anyone thought of COVID or coronavirus, but they all started to converge around this time frame. including Welcome Leap, which, as you pointed out, was first proposed back in 2018, was it? And HARPA, which has been on the blocks for a while and is now finally getting kickstarted, and various other parts of this agenda, the EU vaccine passport agenda that's been, again, planned for years now. Again, all converging on this time frame. And as you say, that magical 2030 year, we see it again and again and again. So it's clearly there is some sort of rush to a finish line going on at this point. Let's, before we get into what we can actually do about this, let's just introduce people to the creepy programs that Welcome Leap is spearheading. So far, I understand they have four on the table.
Yeah, they have four, but actually, as I was writing this, it was three. And then in the middle of the week when I was about to publish it, they create a new one. And then I'm like, oh, all right, well, I have to add that now. So even though they've been around for a little over a year, several of these have only launched in 2021. So it seems like they're picking up other efforts now. And I would argue this is part of a broader effort of people that were involved in developing the policies and narratives of COVID-19 last year have now moved on to plan the post-pandemic phase. Another group that's related to the Welcome Leap that I talked about in a recent podcast is called the Trinity Challenge. They're sort of like the Welcome Leap, but funded by Gates and Facebook and Google, Microsoft, and Eco Health Alliance is very much involved with them. So, you know, that's another example, but a group for another day. But as far as these programs go, the first one they launched, they call HOPE. The abbreviate is HOPE, maybe so it sounds nicer, but it stands for Human Organs, Physiology, and Engineering. Basically, this program, like several of Welcome Leap's programs, has more than one goal. So the first goal, they say, is to basically develop from scratch human organ systems that also have their own immune function or own immune system, as it were, that's also synthesized, from bioengineered from stem cells and other sources. They claim this is a way to eliminate animal testing, which, you know, I think a lot of people would normally perhaps support, because obviously there's a lot of unethical things that happen regarding laboratory experimentation on animals. However, these are the same people that promoted, for example, skipping animal trials with the COVID-19 vaccines. So what better way than this platform to allow them to get products straight from development into people to try them out by basically having this organ system, they say, eliminates the need for animal testing, which of course has been used for decades and decades and decades. We'll have to take their word for it that it works and actually replicates the immune system and all of this stuff. These aren't exactly the people I'd personally be willing to trust there, but they are quite good at selling it under, the justification of eliminating animal trials and the abuse of animals. But again, it's not like the people involved here care about the well-being of animals or regular humans for that matter. But the second goal, I think, is really the principal goal of this project, which they say within 10 years will be used to, they hope, to use cultivated or grown organs that are then transplanted into people, which obviously would have major implications. But in the short term, they want to develop biological synthetic hybrid organ systems to transplant into people. Which obviously, if you look at the transhumanist background of a lot of these organizations or the eugenics background, with eugenics and transhumanism, as you pointed out earlier, being intimately related, that is pretty significant. And there's really, you know, if they get to that first point, what will they continue to advance to cultivated organs and all of that? It remains to be seen. It's worth pointing out, too, that very prominent scientists, including George Church, who came under fire for his Epstein funding and has a lot of connections, but and was also scrutinized by mainstream media for promoting eugenics, among other things, is actually involved in several companies that involve either genetically engineering pigs to grow human organs or creating human pig organs to be transplanted into people. Those companies, both of them, are actually funded by Boris Mikulik's company, Biomatics Capital. Boris Mikulik being the longtime chief scientific advisor to Bill Gates and the backup executor of Jeffrey Epstein's will, mysteriously, despite not knowing how that happened. You can believe that if you want.
Okay, I'm going to leave the Corbett report there. That was from July of this year, July 2021, interview with Whitney Webb, and it's on CorbettReport.com. There's another 45 minutes of that. So if you want to get the rest of the projects and dive in a bit deeper, there's plenty of material on there. There's a lot of eugenics material on his website as well, so I might be borrowing some of that later on in the year when I decide what I want to do from here. So the reason that I didn't have all that much time to prepare the show this week is because I've been preparing another show for Tuesdays. And with a bit of luck, there'll be a roundtable discussion show coming up this Tuesday, with or without a Mercury retrograde involved. I've potentially got a friend of mine who's a clinical psychologist coming on, so and a friend of mine from Amsterdam. So I don't know how many people will show up, but I've arranged for four people. So if four people show up, I'll be happy. If Mercury gets involved, it might just be me sitting on my own on a Tuesday morning. But either way, it'll be a good show. I'll organize something as a backup plan just in case. But that's what I've been doing. So I'm hoping that it'll develop into something here locally. I've now got a connection with somebody who's a journalist and involved in a local TV studio, or I'm about to have an introduction via a friend of mine. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that things will develop. When I started putting out the word for regular contributors, people seem to want to get involved. So there shouldn't be any shortage of people coming on. It's just a matter of the timing is maybe going to be a bit tricky for some people. But we'll see. I know there'll be a couple of people who are regulars, and that's probably enough for starters. I don't want too many people involved until I know how to manage everything properly. And my technology is not always doing its job in the best way, so I don't want to overload anything. We'll see how it goes anyway. So it's Tuesday, I think it's 4 o'clock in the morning Eastern, but it's 9 o'clock my time, which is the important bit. It means it's my first cup of coffee of the day, and it also means that I'm probably not going to be very talkative some of the time, because it's a bit early for me. But we'll see how it goes. The other people that are coming on are fairly talkative, you can't shut them up mostly. So they should be able to carry the show pretty much while I'm drinking my coffee. That's the theory. And I've got a couple of formats that I'm thinking about. I haven't decided the exact format yet. What I'm going to do is just try a couple of things while the Mercury's retrograde, and then make a decision when it goes direct. I think that's probably the best way, because I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket and then have a whole lot of technical issues and other stuff put people off. There's always reasons why people can show up and reasons why people can't, and it's all fine. Particularly the first couple of weeks, because I never expect anything to go right the first couple of times I do it. But then it'll slowly get better, and that's how we learn, isn't it? That's how we learn. I've not moderated, I've not hosted a discussion group on Skype. I've done it in the real world. I've hosted philosophy groups. So there might be some philosophy involved in these round tables. I'm not sure yet. It depends whether the locals want to come on board or not. But up to now, I've got somebody in the States, somebody in the Netherlands, me in the UK. There's another lady who said she might come on. I don't know where she's from, but she wants to talk about coronavirus. So if I can coordinate with her, she'll be on this week. If not, probably the following week. And anybody's welcome to bring research. That's kind of the idea, is we all bring the research that we're doing and kind of pool it as a round table. And then we can question what's going on, question the sources, question the assumptions, and hopefully get a clear view of whether the actual research is useful or whether there's too many question marks or whatever. So that's the plan. I'm open to whatever happens, so I'm not too stressing about it at the moment. I might be on Tuesday, but I'm not at the moment. And as always, you can find me here on a Saturday afternoon. I know Mace Street's been in the chat room. We've got Captain Fred's in the chat room as well. And Pagan Rabbit's joined us. So Revolution Radio is listener supported. We rely on donations to keep the servers running. And there's two servers running almost 24 hours a day. Studio A runs all through the night, pretty much 24 hours. And Studio B runs about 18 hours, depending on what's going on. But it does rely on donations. So if you've got any dollars burning a hole in your pocket, if you want to make a contribution, come down to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and you'll see a donation tab on the top navigation bar. You can set up a Patreon donation. It's monthly, or you can make a one-off donation, or just have a look in the store and see if there's any merchandise you might like. There's always something you can do. Just making a contribution in the chat room is enough. Come down and say hello. They're a friendly bunch. Most of the time. Not all of the time, but most of the time they're a friendly bunch. I could talk about now. What's the other thing I've been doing is the podcast on Podbean. So what I've decided to do, because this round table idea came up on my birthday, which is why I've followed it up. So it's only been in my head for a week and a half, nearly 2 weeks now. So it'll be exactly two weeks. Next Tuesday when it gets running. But I've decided that the radio shows take priority and Podbean's going to be where I do my experimenting. So I'm going to concentrate on the two radio shows a week. They all feed back into the podcast anyway. So everything I do feeds into the podcast. But the two radio shows are going to be priority, and then I'll do like music shows and experimental shows on Podbean until I work out what I want to do there. Because I still haven't found a regular time to do shows there. I keep changing my mind about stuff all the time. Whereas on Revolution Radio, I seem to just, the idea was there, the time slot's there, and it fell into place. So that's the one I go with for the moment. And there'll probably be 10 shows between now and Christmas. I'll run it for 10 weeks, see how we go with it, and then review it, and probably run it another 10 weeks after Christmas, and adapt it as we go along. That's kind of the idea. But it should be fun. So we've got music coming on shortly. I'm going to jump off and get myself a cup of coffee. But I'll see you again on Tuesday morning at 4 a.m. your time, 9 a.m. in the UK. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll see you again twice next week.
listening to Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
What the heck is the truth, jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!